Welcome to the Awaken Therapist podcast, where we explore a holistic and transpersonal approach to psychotherapy. In season four, you'll hear live therapy demos, case consultations, and dynamic teachings designed to awaken transformation in yourself, your clients, and the world. I'm your host, Harmony Quiker. As a psychotherapist, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, I created this podcast to empower you to deepen your presence, expand your awareness, and trust the sacred unfolding that happens in authentic therapeutic contact. To learn more about our trainings, community, and resources, check us out at awakentherapist.com. I was sitting in my own contemplative practice getting ready to meet you, and the thing that kept coming back into my awareness was a question that I keep hearing from people recently. And it's something around what client population is good for this work. And there are specific questions like, my client isn't transpersonal, or they're not spiritual, or they're not a tree hugger. I literally heard that the other day. And so what do I do? And the thing that I think is so interesting about this question is that there's this idea that our clients need to be anything other than they are in order to do this work. And that just isn't true. We're the ones who are trained in transpersonal approaches. So we're the container that is transpersonal. And there's just no right way to be a client, right? Our clients get to be exactly as they are. And so I just find it interesting, like when we're in the practice of being a transpersonal counselor, like what does that really mean in a lived experience?
I love that question because I feel like I have a couple clients who really speak the language of energy, of subtle energy. And so in our work together, there's this kind of natural emergence of together attuning to these more subtle dimensions. But that is a very specific sort of like way of being and way of looking at the world and the self and this kind of work. Because I also find for myself that when clients are kind of on that frequency, it's easier for me to like track their subtle energy, and it feels starts to feel really like collaborative and co-creative. And yeah, I mean, it's easier in a way. So I love that question, and I'm curious to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, it is easier in a way. I agree with that. And the thing that I've seen over the course of my career is that the clients who are more identified with their mind and like really holding on and clinging to this idea that their thoughts are the truth of who they are and their personality is who they are, they're the clients who have the biggest breakthrough.
Yeah.
Because when they do access a more expansive aspect of themselves, it's almost like, I didn't even know this was possible. And now I'm a changed person from this one transpersonal experience. So I happen to love working with clients who have less experience in meditation or psychedelics or whatever other transpersonal experiences clients have, because the potential, it feels so much bigger to me.
Yeah, I love that. And it's such a growth edge for me. I have a client right now who I haven't seen in a few weeks. So he's not one that I kind of prepared for this, but he is so like top-down processor, very in his head. And when we first started working together, I was like, I don't know if we're a good fit because it stretches me, you know, like I'm so like such a body person, bottom up. And his big challenge in his life is like, is connecting with his felt sense. Like he'll just kind of shut off and like will literally get like sleepy when he feels big emotions. Like he just totally goes offline.
And it's such a wise adaptive strategy to check out from the body when we don't know how to be with that experience. And so it's a really important entry point into accessing the transpersonal, really. But the other thing that I love that you said, and I think this is so true, is that it really calls on us as the clinician to expand our capacity to be in the transpersonal when we're engaged with a client who has less capacity.
I just had a question arise. I know you talk a lot in this work about not colluding with clients' stories and strategies. And I really feel that and how big that is. But like with this client, I feel this impulse to try to meet him where he is a little bit. And I found myself doing a little more psychoed than I ever would do, or a little more transparency about my process. And I'm wondering if you have thoughts on that balance between not colluding, but kind of meeting certain parts of clients. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, such a good question. I think that it's a slippery slope
Yeah.
because when a client is really hooked into their mind, if we start getting hooked in there also, we are keeping the container at a certain level that actually interrupts the potential for depth. I hear it frequently. I've experienced it myself where if I can appeal to the client's mind, I can enroll them in this process. And really, that actually interrupts the ability to create a transpersonal container in some ways because we're continuing to give power to the ordinary mind, essentially, as opposed to just bringing awareness to the desire to know, to have concrete information about what's going to happen and the unknown, and to really be with that in and of itself begins to create the culture of our container. I like to paraphrase Einstein here, which is to say that we cannot transform our suffering from the same level of thinking that creates it. And so, if we're engaging with the client's mind, that part of themselves that's creating their own suffering, and trying to enroll that part into their healing, we're actually inhibiting the container from opening up to the depth that we really want to open up to. That isn't to say that we ignore that desire, but it's how we meet that desire from a transpersonal approach is very different from a traditional psychotherapy approach, which would start with some psychoeducation. The other thing is that I think that we are teaching our clients, we're essentially educating them on how to be with themselves by how we approach them. And so the education just looks different. It's just more experiential than it is educational, like in a traditional sense of education.
Yeah, I love that. That makes sense. It makes me feel curious about ways to meet the mind in a transpersonal way. I'm remembering this brain spotting training that I did, which is like very somatic, experiential modality where there you are kind of like wanting to go beyond the sort of like thinking brain into these deeper parts of it. But we almost talked about this kind of more cognitive thinking brain as a protective part, sort of. And so there was this kind of instruction to, and I have this background in body work and very ceremonial trauma processing where we will just literally not talk at all. Like it's 100% a body thing. There was kind of this instruction to care for the thinking brain and like it is this sort of more vulnerable, protective part. How does that land?
Yeah, the care though comes from attunement, not from education. So when we can see our client as accurately as possible, if they are in a survival strategy by staying in their mind, which in all likelihood they are, attuning to that is actually what I'm speaking to in terms of not ignoring what's happening, but teaching them how to be with themselves by experiencing that deep witness from the very beginning. And then almost always, I follow this up with an invitation for them to attune to themselves. Because my attunement combined with their self-attunement is what begins to create the openings for awareness. And I would venture to say that our clients who have more transpersonal capacity have that capacity for self-attunement. And so the clients who don't, we're just starting to teach them from the beginning how to really come into presence with themselves in a very gentle, invitational way.
That makes sense. It really is this just like holding a bigger field of awareness and like holding that part in the awareness, not ignoring it, but just this like zooming out.
The other thing that new clinicians, or at least students, not all of them, but I would say a large portion of my students seem to have some insecurity or fear about being a clear mirror of reflection, like a deeply attuned to their client. Because to be this attuned, we need to see our clients as they actually are, not just as they say that they are. And I've been thinking about this quite a bit lately. And what I've arrived to is this guess. that comes from my own experience and what I've learned from my students. And that is that those of us who are called into this work are the seers of our family. We're the ones who are attuned, who are seeing everything. But as a child, we didn't really have the voice or the space to say what we are seeing, the deep accuracy of the patterns of our family, even though we were highly aware of them. And so then here we are in this therapeutic space where now that skill that we've always had, that's kind of our superpower, is essential to the therapeutic process. And there's still this fear, like, is it okay for me to say this? Am I going to cause a rupture by telling my client how they seem to me fully, as opposed to just following what they're saying? And I think that this relates to the question about the client who wants to know and who's really in their head. Like, am I safe to give this greater attuned reflection without just following their mind?
Yeah. And what's your experience? It makes so much sense to me that like on a deep level we all like want to be attuned to, and it can be so moving to really be seen wholly, but have you had clients who are like not ready to be reflected in a way and there is some kind of rupture or reaction?
I've never experienced that. And I think there's a few reasons why. One is when I am attuning to my client, I have this genuine stance in my heart that says, essentially, I want to make sure I'm seeing you as you actually are so that you feel completely welcome as you actually are. I'm not wanting to attune to my client to try to change them in any way. And if I had that agenda, their nervous system would feel it and feel me as a threat. And because I have this deep, unconditional welcoming of humanity, it's this like relief. And what I've heard clients say to me is, you see the parts of me that I don't even want to see. And they feel so loved and welcome here that I can't help but love and welcome them too. Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
The other thing that I see is that because clients feel so loved and welcome in that attunement, even if it's after the first session, they'll come to the second session and they'll say something like, I normally want to tell somebody this, but I know you'll understand. And so they'll tell me this thing that's like so hidden and like deep because they know that I'm a safe space for them. And they start to feel more safe within themselves because not only am I creating a container that offers their nervous system the conditions of safety that the nervous system requires to regulate, I'm also teaching them through my interventions how to be a safe container for themselves.
Yeah. I feel like my understanding of transpersonal psychology is deepening right now, and really just how much the state of awareness of the therapist changes the container. And it's making me think about when I was in my diagnostic psychopathology class in school, which I did find to be very interesting, you know, and like my analytical brain loved it. But I felt how I would get into this very objectifying place when I was reading about it a lot. Like you start to shrink people into this label, into this like constellation of symptoms. And I think that it can have value to know about that. But in terms of bringing that into therapeutic work, people do feel it in their nervous systems, even if they aren't aware of it. I know that.
Yes, and our clients are multidimensional beings, and every symptom is adaptive. And so when we hold them in the wholeness of their humanity in that way, even if their symptoms do fall in a certain category, they start to shift and become more flexible internally as their own awareness increases. Just taking, for example, personality disorders, which I actually love to talk about because understanding the diagnostic criteria is actually very helpful to the therapist in terms of not getting lost in the symptom picture. And it helps us to sort of understand their inner map and the way the mind is moving with more clarity when we understand that diagnostic criteria. And when we're working with a client who meets that criteria, we're still not trying to change the personality itself. We're wanting to support our client in waking up to those personality strategies so that they can find their way through them back into their autonomous, sovereign self.
Yeah, that makes so much sense.
The other thing that we're doing here is we are creating the space for the client's innate wisdom to guide their way back home to themselves. So if I, as the therapist, think that I'm the one who's going to bring them there, if I'm going to bring them into their body or bring them to their healing, then I'm interrupting the process. And so it's this rigorous, deep trust that every single client, no matter the extent of their trauma, the extent of how hyper-identified they are with their mind, the extent of their personality strategies, no matter how they present, they hold the wisdom to their healing. And that we always position the container that way.
Yeah, it's just like really bringing another level to this idea of like therapist as tool or like the importance of our own self-work. It's these really subtle dimensions of how we show up in session, like really shape the process.
So true. It's so true. I'm sure you've heard the story. I share it often, but I realized as a new clinician that I was getting in the way. And the way I was getting in the way was my personality just so genuinely wanted to help. I wanted to carry their burden. I wanted to be responsible for their healing. And from the outside, that could seem so innocent and pure, but it wasn't, because it was my personality strategy. It was actually my survival mechanism inhibiting the contact, the co-regulation, and the clarity of the container. And so when I finally woke up to it, I was kind of excited. So I'm like, oh, I see what I'm doing now. And so I could stop doing it. And it was really vulnerable. It's really vulnerable to not follow the pattern of the personality.
It takes like a real trust in, I don't even know what the trust is in, like their innate wisdom, the present, but it feels kind of magical, you know. It's like it's so organic. I remember doing like the Gestalt demo and just like going up there and feeling so vulnerable and like I have no what is going to happen, and my client is just like, you know, talking about these like little things that are happening right now, but something magical just starts to unravel.
To me, I see it as the inherent intelligence of the field itself starts to guide everything. And so we are part of that, our clients are part of that, and the collaboration is bigger than anything that we can individually do when we're collaborating in that field together. And that's the I-Thou that Martin Buber so beautifully describes, is that between dimension.
I was thinking about the I-Thou recently, and not necessarily in a therapeutic setting, but even just in relationships, how when we start to, as we gain as our awareness grows and we start to be able to see more of these kind of like unconscious patternings, if we put too much of our attention on them, like they can actually get louder in the field of the other person. And so even just as like, you know, as someone who does this work of seeing and growing our awareness, it's just a gift to the people around us to really hold our awareness on their like innate goodness, their soul self, because it's not helpful to amplify those like adaptive strategies.
Absolutely. And as a mother, for me, that was so huge. My child is like in an experience to really hold space and honor them without trying to fix it or give them the answer. It was really transformative in my development to realize like even my young child has that wisdom and I need to see that in them. Otherwise, I am overriding that for them and I'm teaching them to override that. Yeah, I could feel that in the spark of my belly as I say that. It was so important for me.
Yeah, makes sense.
I feel all like lit up right now. How are you feeling?
Yeah, inspired and really like I'm having a more embodied understanding of some of these things and just really reconnecting to the profundity. And I mean, I just keep wanting to use the word magic. It just feels so magical to me.
Yeah, it feels magical to me too. One thing I want to say about that is that I think a misconception is that this work isn't evidence-based because it's magical and intuitive. And to me, that's part of this really specialness of Gestalt, is that it is evidence-based. You can use this approach and get reimbursed by insurance companies. That, magic does not eliminate evidence. Yeah. And you had said you'd prepared a few cases.
All right, the first client that I wanted to bring in, she is probably in her mid-50s. We were seeing each other bi-weekly for a while, but now it's mostly weekly. She always turns away from the camera during our sessions. She's never like looking straight at me. She like positions herself looking away. And she started seeking therapy with me because her father was on his deathbed. And he has since passed away. But it was this long, like he was really sick and she was caring for him, and obviously a very stressful, intense process, complicated by the fact that she has a history of abuse by him, physical and verbal abuse growing up. She grew up with a lot of siblings, a very Catholic family, and her father was just very abusive. So, really complex grief. And then there's this other layer where everything since her father's passing with her siblings and the estate, like there's just so much drama and contention with that. And she just feels very, very slighted all the time. And yeah, like we'll just kind of want to talk about how wrong she feels and all these things her siblings did wrong and how she deserves all this, you know, more money and et cetera, et cetera. So she can get kind of wrapped up in that. I feel that maybe there's some kind of dissociative proclivities. We've done brain spotting a couple times. You know, I always introduce it in this very trauma-informed way where I'm like, we can stop anytime you want, don't have to go past what feels comfortable. And she would have a stop after like 10, 15 minutes and would be like, I'm just like not feeling anything anymore. So one day I was like, we can totally stop if you want. And if it's just that there's kind of an absence of feeling, it might just mean that we've kind of reached this dissociative layer of your nervous system. So we persisted a little bit that day, but it'll happen. You know, there was a session a couple weeks ago where I felt like she was kind of coming into contact with a deeper, more tender part of herself. It was around her dad and messages she had taken in from him, but even though she knew they were damaging, she didn't want to let go of them because they were her connection to her dad. And we were just kind of being in that together. And then I check in with her, you know, what are you noticing? And she had gone off on a totally different journey. So that was an interesting moment for me because I followed that sort of, and it did feel like we pulled out of some work that we were doing. I think that's kind of the general picture.
Yeah. And so I heard you say she doesn't look at you, she looks away
Yeah.
throughout the session.
Yeah.
And how do you feel when you sit with her?
I feel that we are kind of like on the surface. I get kind of frustrated sometimes and honestly bored sometimes because she'll get so like wrapped up in the minutiae of these dramas with her family.
And when you were talking about the drama with the family, I was hearing it as like she sees herself as the victim of
Yes,
their behavior.
very much.
Yeah. Have you illuminated that?
I don't think I've named that specifically. No.
Yeah. What do you notice just as I say that?
Yeah, I feel a little nervousness come up because I do sense that this, and it goes back so far where even when she was a kid, she's like, it was, you know, me and my brother who got it all, and like I'm the one who had to care for my dad. So yeah, I feel nervous when I consider that, but it does feel like a reflection of kind of the greater what's happening.
To me, it sounds like possibly it's a persistent part of her personality since she was victimized so young. You said the father abused her physically and verbally, and she doesn't want to let go of it because that's her connection to dad. And so the role of victim seems like it's a huge part of the identity. And so she's talking about what's happening with the siblings. You're hearing her personality coming through.
Yeah.
And so to me, it seems like the loudest thing in the room.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then some hesitancy to bring that up in you.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it makes sense to me that you're bored then too, because if she checks out, like if she's not looking at that and you're not looking at that, and then the pattern is to turn away and check out, then you're
Yeah.
in the field and feeling that too.
Yeah. And it's not like the real heart of it. How would you, just more generally outside of this client, I feel anxious naming this sort of like victim mindset that I feel like people can get attached to because I don't want to dismiss their actual lived experience of being victimized. How would you do that in a like a gentle way?
I'd probably use a different word and something that's more descriptive of what's happening. And I would map it to the pattern with the siblings and to childhood simultaneously, just as a reflection. Let me see if I can just find my words for it here as a suggestion. Something like, when I listen to you talk about your siblings, I think I'm hearing this as, I don't have any power here.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you notice when I say that? And
Okay.
she's like, yeah, I don't have any power. I've never had any power. And then I would say, yeah, it reminds me of the story of your childhood where dad would yell at you and hit you and you didn't have any power. What do you notice when I say that? So I'm just mapping it out very gently.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. But really, I'm getting to the essence of the way that taking on the role of victim has been adaptive for her.
Yeah.
And I'm not wanting to change it. I'm not wanting to make her not be that. I'm just wanting to bring awareness to it.
Yeah.
Because in this approach, we just want to fill the container with awareness so that the client can eventually find the clarity of their sovereign choice.
Yeah.
If the pattern here is I give my will over to others and resent them for it, which is a really common pattern of victimhood. The collapse around one's own will, one's own sovereignty, the deep repair of connecting in the body to the solar plexus, to the spark of one's own will, to true desire, to self-trust. I mean, that's a process that doesn't happen in just one session. To me, that's where she's heading.
Yeah, it's interesting as you're saying that. I'm remembering when she talks about this stuff, definitely there is this undercurrent of being very victimized, but it's also portrayed in a way where, like, she's very righteous and assertive, and her language is very much not like, oh, like, poor me. It's really kind of combative. So there's almost this protective layering over it.
Yeah, and I mean, you just highlighted the polarity.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm a victim. I don't have any power. I know what's right and I want it this way. And
Yeah.
that's the inner conflict.
Okay. That makes so much sense. Yeah, I have such a hard time tracking polarities. I feel like I'll be able to like see one thing that's there. And so sometimes I'll just like if I'm doing an empty chair, just put that piece in a chair without knowing what's in the other one. Is that legit?
I mean, it's legit, but what happens like 9 times out of 10 is that as the client is sitting in the other chair that doesn't have the interject or whatever's in the empty chair, they will end up speaking from the polarity. And then the container can kind of get a little confusing if you don't reset context.
Okay, I felt that happen.
Yeah. And so the other thing, though, is that when you start to see the dominant pattern, even in this case, let's just say the dominant pattern is self-righteousness and you hadn't quite seen that victim piece yet. Bringing awareness to self-righteousness as much as possible in the most welcoming way, both you attuning to self-righteousness and the client. What will end up happening with enough presence and enough surrender is the other part will come up.
Yeah.
And the client will be like, but I don't have a choice. And I'm so mad, I don't have a choice. And now you can see it very clearly, but it takes just a lot of awareness and space for that to happen organically. There's no need to go digging. It will happen.
Okay. All right. And it can just happen through, like, there doesn't have to be kind of a this sort of like embodied ceremonial creating space through an empty chair. It can just be through awareness of like holding that part that we see.
Yeah, absolutely. Fritz Perls had so many quotes that were just so brilliant, but one that I love is something to the effect of a person can't stand the truth if it's told to them. They can only stand the truth if they find it for themselves because the pride of discovery makes the truth palatable. That's a paraphrase. But that this piece around like victimhood, let's say, like if I map out that relationship to power in the way that I did, and then we end up doing an experiment, the client will naturally of their own see like, oh, I've been playing this role of the victim, and they'll see it for themselves. And then that is where the spark of new choice births from. I'm just seeing if there's anything else with this client. The turning away feels important.
Yeah.
And then you get bored and checked out. It might be that as you deepen in the work, you just like map out with awareness and it seems like it's happening again. Like you're trailing off or checking out. Just let yourself so that you're inviting her to deflect or desensitize consciously, as opposed to just letting it take over the energy of the field itself.
Yeah. That makes sense. Just bringing that awareness to it, not trying to change it, not trying to make it different, but just adding that awareness.
And not trying to ignore it, because if you ignore it, then you're going to feel it, which is important always. Because in this work, when we're working transpersonally, if we aren't creating awareness for our clients to actually process the emotions that's theirs, we end up feeling it. And that's where we end up getting burned out, like, ugh, or like we dread seeing that client because we're feeling what's theirs to feel because we haven't adequately created the opening for them to process their own emotions.
So in this example I shared where we were kind of getting into some deeper points of contact and then she went into another story, like that could have been a good opportunity to just name that I noticed her deflecting or
Yeah, and remind me what she was starting to see in the depth.
she was really connecting to some of the pain of these, I forget what it was specifically, but it was some introject from her father, but not wanting to really kind of like name that or make space with that because it was keeping her close to her father.
And so I would map out the whole piece. Like we were talking about this piece with your father and you wanting to hold on to this. Not wanting to let go of the pain, and then you started to trail off. What do you notice about yourself right now? So that you just keep inviting in awareness. The other thing that this mapping does is it honors the wisdom of that movement, because with deflection in particular, when a client moves away from something uncomfortable, it is adaptive. But when we allow them and create the space for them to turn away from discomfort, not only consciously, but in contact with us, while they stay in contact with themselves, it's like they get to turn away to completion. They get to complete that movement instead of having it be just this habitual pattern. If you found this episode meaningful and want to hear the full conversation, you can access the entire episode by joining us on Patreon. Your support helps make this work possible and allows us to continue offering deep experiential content like this. As a member, you'll also get access to extended sessions, discounts on trainings, and behind-the-scenes discussions on the therapeutic process. To join the community and learn more about our trainings, visit us at awakentherapist.com or click the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening.